Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Future of Assessment. My name is Gavin O'Mara. I'm the CEO and founder of FE News. This is a co-produced live stream with our friends over at NTFE, and this episode is Inclusivity and Assessment. My co-host today is Jessica Blakey. Jessica, would you like to join us? Jessica, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, really, really good. And today's a really, really cool episode because we're going to be looking at inclusivity and in assessment, basically, and looking at different dimensions around what that means, what we've learned from pandemic and moving forward and before, and what we can move into the future. And what would be really cool to sort of explore is accessibility. Why is that a priority to you? So you do it as the day role, but it'd be quite cool to sort of understand what that means for you and NTFE, basically.
Yeah, sure. So inclusivity and accessibility kind of should weave its way throughout assessment, because accessibility is one element of our assessment principles in assessment design at NCFE. So that's alongside reliability, validity, manageability. So we engage as a team, we engage with current research like quite a lot. And in our reading group, we discussed the organisation JISC's work on future of assessment, which was kind of five principles, five targets for 2025. So around things like accessibility, but also things like authenticity, automation, secure assessment. And we thought, well, we do a lot of that well. We're quite confident that we do quite a lot of that well. But the section on accessible assessment highlighted that there was so much more we could do. So we committed to start like looking at it and exploring it. So for us, accessible means it has to be designed throughout to be usable by everyone to the greatest possible extent. So that's kind of everything from your protected characteristics, so people who have long-term disability or short-term injury or mental health challenges, but also going kind of thinking about neurodiversity, other kind of aspects of diversity as well. We need to consider universal design, especially in our work, because from the very beginning, we know that if you're designing with certain challenges in mind, so for example, mental health issues are currently on the rise amongst young people in particular, there should be a specific consideration when we think about the learners we're designing for and the challenges that they've had to face in their education so far. Obviously, at the minute, we're designing kind of, there might be people doing our assessments who've been in full-time education and haven't sat a formal assessment for perhaps 4 or 5 years. If they're of a certain age. So we know that representation matters. There's a body of work emerging in education research about kind of the importance of diversity in educational spaces, and not fully considering that like in who we work with and what we produce will also kind of undermine the validity of what we're trying to do. So we need to look at multiple perspectives to achieve that kind of real life occupational authenticity in our assessments, thinking about everybody who might be looking at taking them and looking after what we do.
Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. And I think I'd like to bring in our two guests. So we've got Jem Turner and Dan Howard. And this, hi, Jem. Hey, Dan. Hi.
Morning.
Hello.
What I'd like to do is sort of just explore around the topic a little bit more, really, if we could. And I think, Jem, I don't know if you could introduce yourself, and then maybe if we could go into how can we make assessment more inclusive?
Yeah, so I'm Jem Turner. I'm a disabled content creator and consultant from West Yorkshire. It's such a big question and it's my jam. I love talking about this, but I think how can we make it more accessible as a starter is understanding the word further on as just a buzzword, because you know, we hear that word all the time. And I think we're used to saying it, but what do we actually mean? And Jess has kind of just touched on this, but for me as a wheelchair user, a lot of my barriers are physical, but we don't just mean physical, obviously. And when it comes to education, I think we need to be looking at people's strengths rather than people's limits and barriers. And I think to be truly inclusive, we need to be looking at what would actually suit everybody rather than, you know, sticking to the same old thing. Education has been the same for so long. And actually, what would happen if we just stripped it all back and started again? And I think this project that myself and Jess have been doing, we've really been looking at that and trying to just change it up and not being afraid to do that. So, yeah, that's my initial thought, but we can go further into that later.
We can delve deeper into that. Dan, how about you? If you could introduce yourself. I know a lot of our audience know who you are already, Dan. But maybe if you could also explain how we can make assessment more inclusive, because I know you've been looking very, very deeply at this as well.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. My name's Dan Howard and I'm Operations Director at NCFE and I'm also Chair of our Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee. When it comes to education, I think it's really important not to underestimate the power of education and the life-changing opportunities that it can give to anybody from anywhere and any time in their life. And I think accessibility really, really comes into play there when you think about the different spectrum of learner or someone who's undertaking education. You know, they could be a school leaver, they might be at school, they could be someone going to college, they might be an adult learner, or they could be someone who's trying to, you know, upskill to return to the labour market. So you've got a real broad spectrum of individual who's accessing education in order to fulfill their own potential for not just the world of work, but in everyday life. And I think it's really important that when you look at, you know, inclusivity, you know, the definition of inclusivity, really, it's around not excluding. And I think it's around, you know, as an educational services charity, what we're trying to do at NCFE is make sure that we're creating a fairer and more inclusive society through the power of education and making sure that the qualifications that we develop, the wraparound support services, the learning materials, the methods of assessment aren't leaving anybody behind.
Yeah, Dan, that's great. Jen, can we go a little bit deeper from what you touched on a second ago? What do you see the biggest barriers to be for people that are disabled but are trying to access learning? And did the pandemic make any difference to how it's been from the past to how we're sort of in this weird in-between stage where we go to the future?
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of barriers, I think it's the really subtle things that people don't think about. So for me, I'm really passionate about language. And when it comes to education and, you know, it's things like looking at questions and seeing a word that maybe is not the right, it's not the right phrase. But in that moment, when you're in an exam, you've got to still carry on and do the best you can. So language is really important to not just get it right, but get it right because it impacts somebody's, you know, education, grades, and feelings as well. I've done a video as part of NCFE's project, and one of the questions I asked the participants was, have you ever been in a situation where you've had an exam and it's triggered certain feelings? And somebody actually, you could see them squirm in the seat because they have been in that situation where they've read a question and they've thought, oh, that's a bit, you know, that doesn't sound quite right. So it happens. And I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, we see education as everybody's an expert and we're not. You know, and as soon as we start saying that, we can make things better. So that's a barrier to me, is acknowledging that we don't get it right. And what was the second part of that question? Again,
with the pandemic, have things improved basically between I can hear a bit of an echo, sorry. So have things improved basically between the pandemic, the way it's been sort of engaging and opened up access for you?
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of really good things in terms, obviously, the pandemic has been horrific for the whole world. But I think in terms of accessibility and being online, a lot of people have been able to have a lot more control of how they learn. They can do it in their own time, which is a massive benefit for especially disabled people, managing their energy, including myself. I'm self-employed and I've been able to set meetings whenever's comfortable for me. And it's little changes like that where once we start accepting that flexibility is a thing, who knew we could navigate life to suit us. And I've heard feedback from other disabled people that now they can focus on their education rather than the barriers that they experience. So in fact, one wheelchair user said it actually was a complete different experience because no one saw a wheelchair, so no one treated it any differently, and that was a complete new experience. So it's interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. Jessica, what do you think we can sort of learn from the pandemic? Because you've obviously been sort of looking at this for a while. What can we see as a way of sort of taking those lessons and moving forward with positives, really?
Yeah, so one thing I think that about moving everything online is that there's been a lot of resistance to that in the education community to date. But we've proven that we can do it, and not only can we do it well. And so looking at things like innovative methods for assessment, how do people access learning resources, group work for each other. So if you're somebody who struggles with face-to-face, wants to work remotely, well, you can. And why aren't we like building that into to what we do? Which I think is a significant thing that we need to be considering. I also think, like Gemma said, that there's a certain amount of things that we can take from the pandemic that just because we're going back to normal now, back to normal, we shouldn't discount. There's lots that have come out of that that we should seek to maintain, and that is kind of the flexibility of access. Thinking about as well. Who is accessing and when? Thinking about the technologies that we're using and who's got access to them at different points. So all the different facets, really. And I think that's a bigger piece of work plugging into e-assessment, but it is something that assessment design are looking at going forward. Like, what makes good e-assessment? Should it be the same as what's on the paper? Should it be different on the screen? And how are people using that? Are we building in sufficient breaks, sufficient support, all that kind of thing?
Yeah, no. Dan, can we talk about some of the things which are sort of like the physical elements which could be barriers to assessment? Some of the things that are not physical, but sometimes are a little bit hidden, or people haven't thought around like fully, if you know what I mean. Because a lot of this sort of stuff is people just haven't thought this through fully. You know, it's not sort of intentional, but how can we then sort of learn and move forward as to develop solutions? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it goes beyond assessment as well, Gavin. I think if you just think about the whole educational journey and landscape, it's not just, the assessment methods along that learner journey. It's how do you access teaching and learning, and the access to high quality education. It does go beyond the physical, and I have a hidden disability. Not many people know that because it's hidden. I choose to tell people sometimes, I sometimes don't. So if you think about, accessibility to technology, and I think linking back to the pandemic slightly, whilst we really kind of made headway and progress in the world of education in terms of different methods of teaching and homeschooling and everyone getting online, etc. That did really highlight the digital poverty gap. And if you think about digital poverty and the socioeconomic barriers that people face, now that's not a protected characteristic, but it is something that really does impact on inclusivity and accessibility to education. So you have to go beyond, the protected characteristics within the Equality Act to really truly be inclusive and accessible. And I think, to Jess's point earlier around being authentic, are one of our pillars in our assessment design and creative practices on developing assessment methodologies. Sorry, I'm getting loads of pop-ups and they're going to be annoying. I think I've got a reminder of something in 15 minutes. So if you think about the assessment principles and, you know, Jess mentioned being authentic, but how can we be authentic if we're not thinking about inclusivity and accessibility? You know, that doesn't stand true to our core values as an educational services organization. And I think, you know, being able to adapt technology so you can cater for varied different needs. You know, some of the work we're doing with neurodiverse learners in Manchester, for example, is around making sure that we're helping to create opportunities for learners who recognize themselves as being neurodiverse into apprenticeships. So there's various different things that you can get involved in around widening participation. But what I think is really important, and what some people probably misjudge, is equal access to opportunity doesn't necessarily mean you should forget individuality, because, you know, there's a real blurred line there where you're thinking about, oh, I need to be equal, I need to treat everybody the same. Well, you don't, because difference shouldn't be something that divides us and something that should be celebrated. So you need to be mindful of treating someone as an individual, as well as being inclusive and treating them with accessibility.
Do you mind if I build on that a little bit? So when we're talking about exactly that, so thinking about things like socioeconomic status, so you have your kind of physical barriers that to accessible education. Well, then also the systemic ones. We know that people from different racial backgrounds and different cultural backgrounds access education differently, and the way that we interact with our qualifications is different. So part of what we've done is writing a new framework to be used in our assessment design and production, which considers all facets of identity and where they intersect. So thinking about providing our writers and reviewers the guide to correct language and representation, but also things like committing to increasing the instances of neutral and positive appearances of diversity. So, for example, as well as considering how a wheelchair user accesses the assessment physically, and, you know, are we building in the right structures to support that? Making sure that if we have an opportunity to write a case study, can we have a wheelchair user neutrally represented, not in kind of a let's discuss how somebody with a wheelchair user might go on a stage in a performing arts qualification, but for example, showing a video of a wheelchair user as a video to be discussed without making that the whole focus. So that neutral and positive representation, so important for making sure that people can see that the qualifications are for everyone, and that there's no barriers to taking our qualifications just because of an aspect of your identity.
You're right, Jess. There's so much you can do through people's lived experiences. And I think it's about how you positively use people's lived experience to promote, advance, you know, what we do as an organization, but the education system as a whole, in terms of, you know, making sure everyone has got equal access to opportunity, and we're using people's lived experiences to tell those positive stories that anybody and everybody can do it and should have the right to do it.
Yeah,
I think what's really interesting is we're covering like a massive load of ground here. So we're talking everything from like physical barriers of entry. And I mean, Jem, you've experienced some things we've talked before, like the show around, like, did you want to share your experience of the driving test that you completed? Because I think that's quite interesting, and I would never have thought of this before. And I think it's sort of, I think a lot of this today, I'm hoping, will be, I never thought of that before. And then it can sort of instill positive change. Do you know what I mean? Basically, could you share that, Jem? Because I thought it really touched me, but what you sort of
went through that, to be honest. I'll just do a little cough. So this is an example of, you know, I know it sounds again buzzwordy, but systematic ableism, which for anyone who hasn't heard that before, basically discriminatory attitudes towards disabled people in terms of how the system is built. And I recently passed my theory test, whoop whoop. But thank you. When I was revising, obviously we all just try and power through, revise as much as you can, and I came across a question that said, if you see a disabled car parking spot, what should you do? and the multi choice answers were A, park in it, B, go somewhere else, C, it was something like, yeah, hop in, but don't be too long, something like that. And obviously, as a disabled person myself, I wanted to put go in the disabled parking spot because I'm disabled and that's what I do. But I, when I clicked that answer, I got it wrong. And the actual real, in quotes, answer was go somewhere else. And I think that's a really shocking example of how somebody who has actually created this system has assumed that disabled people don't drive, which is, it's not only shocking, but it's disappointing. And it impacted me emotionally as well, because it was a slap in the face, really. And that's not professional to say, but it was, because I just thought, wow, someone who is in charge of my driving experience could have changed that for me because of one question. And I think that's a really powerful example of why it's not just a tick box experience, but it's actually impacting people's emotions, people's life changes. You know, driving for me has changed my life physically. But that one question could have meant that I didn't pass. So that's why, you know, I do this work, because it's about people's lives. It's not just, you know, an hour exam and then that's it. So, yeah, that's my experience.
That's really important as well. Sorry.
Thank you for sharing it. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, it's important for people to hear. No, Jess, yeah. It's completely cool. And I completely understand, because I think people have got emotion, and also it sort of can sketch out a massive part of your life, can education. So how you've experienced education, and could that be assessment, or could that be teacher, could it be anything, can actually really affect you for longer term. And I think there's some things which are just unintentional, which people didn't realise, where it can have such a knock-on effect. So one thing, we've been skipping around it, but I want to sort of shine a light on it, is other things which are unintentional, where... Dan, I wanted to ask you about this in particular. Like, how at times could assessment and the LGBTQ plus community be affected? Because there's unintentional things at times, but like, how can that also affect people with like their emotion, like mental health, around sort of different things, around questions being asked in certain ways as well, when it's identity and who they are, you know?
I mean, it goes beyond LGBTQ, because it's everything. But I would say, and I'll use my language very carefully here, because as a openly gay man, I've been lucky, but that's the word that I want you to cling on to there, because I've never come across any sort of homophobia or any barriers myself when accessing education or the world of work. You know, I've always worked for very inclusive organisations who just accept me as Dan. But I've been lucky, and isn't it sad that I've been lucky is a phrase that I'll use there, because that isn't everyone's experience. And you have to understand that someone's lived experience, whether it's just how they feel, that's reality to them. And it's about the language, I think, that we use. And to the point, again, I'll raise from Jess earlier around being authentic, because education should be for everybody, regardless of whether you're in the LGBTQ plus community, whether you're physically disabled, whether you've got a mental health issue, whether you're neurodiverse, you know, you grew up in a council house and had free school meals as a child. You know, it's irrelevant. Everybody should have had equal access to opportunity, which includes education. And I think we need to be mindful of language and some of the, you know, when you're completing forms and enrolling onto courses and things like that, it's about making sure that we are as open and transparent as possible. I remember recently I was doing my, because I'm chair of governors for my primary school, and you have to renew your police clearance check every so often. And I was filling out the form just to make sure that it was in date, and the only options I had on the form was male or female. Now, I'm just Dan and I recognize as Dan, but for somebody else, they could take real offense to that, because the only options on that form, which was a physical paper form that I had to complete, said gender, male or female. There was nothing else there. Now, that isn't truly inclusive, because people will identify as whatever they want, and that's fine because it's personal choice to them. But that's just a real example of where we need to catch up. And I think some of the work we're doing through our Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee here at NCFE is not just the things we want to do for our own people and the workforce of NCFE, but also our customers, their learners, the ultimate beneficiaries of our charity, is to make sure that we're making assessment methodologies more accessible, our learning resources accessible anywhere, anytime. The tech we use to deploy our methods of assessment or our learning resources, kind of comply to the most accessible guidelines that we can in terms of online web content. So it's about just looking at it with a different lens. And I think, language and looking at things through a different lens and almost kind of doing that equality impact assessment on some of the work that you're doing is really important, so that you're not marginalizing or excluding anybody, regardless of whether they're LGBTQ plus or any of the other kind of categories that sit within the Equality Act. It's just it's a given right. You should be doing it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
No, 100%. 100%. We're nearly done at time. I can't believe that. They just disappeared in the blink of an eye. I'd like to ask everyone one last question. Is if you could have your way, you could do anything, have a magic wand sort of approach, what would you want to be able to do? What would be your dream and what would be the big one, Jessica, for the future of assessment?
So specifically around accessibility, I'd love an end-to-end process. It's really boring. Sorry, it's not a magic wand question, it's a process question. To say, kind of from the beginning, when we're first envisioning who's going to be taking this, all the way through, how can we put in those kind of supports and those variables to be able to support somebody with kind of profound and distinct needs all the way through to still be able to achieve, without them ever having to ask the question, is this for me? Like, we really want to make this for every learner, and for me, we'll get there. And this is the first step. So yeah, building that all the way through is something that we're looking at.
That's great. Jem, if you could dream and dream big, what would you want to see for the future of assessment?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a controversial one, but I would take people's awkwardness and ego away, because I think that is a massive barrier as to why we don't do more of this work, because we don't want to get it wrong. But if you don't start somewhere, then we're just going to stay in the same cycle. So I think, yeah, I would take away that oh, I don't know where to start, so I just won't. People watching this, if you take one thing away, just start thinking about what we need to be doing, and that's one step closer to getting a bit more inclusive and accessible. So yeah, I would say that.
Oh, that's cool. Dan, if you had one big dream about the future of assessment, what would you want it to be?
I think if I had a magic wand, it would be that we don't need to have conversations like this or have meetings like this, because it's part of everyday life. And I think, the more, to Jem's point, don't be afraid to get it wrong neither. Start, have the conversation. Inclusivity is around, not excluding anybody and giving everyone equal access. Start talking about it. Don't be fearful of getting things wrong. But my magic wand moment would be that actually we don't need to be having specific conversations around it, because we've done what we needed to do and it's just part of everyday life.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Thank you, everyone. Our time is just about gone. So thank you, all the audience, for joining us today. This is part two of 8 series, Future of Assessment, and we're exploring all different elements around it. Dan, I'm sure you're going to be back on again later.
No
on
doubt.
The whole idea is to shine different lights into different parts of the ecosystem to bring different people in. And just thank you, everyone, who's been a part of this day. This is totally co-produced. This is Jessica was so much a part of running this and bringing this all together. So Jessica, thank you. Jem, it's been a pleasure to meet you and to join us today. Thank you so much. And Dan, it's always a pleasure. And in the background for NCFE, it wouldn't be right not to say thank you to Lindsay and Kim as well. We've really done everything. And also, I said I'd get it into the...
new brand.
I said I'd get it in. I tried drinking it one, but I'm going to pour it down myself. And from FE News side of things, yeah, thank you as well to Leah, who's been running the show in the background. Thank you so much. Kelly, get well soon. And Finley, thank you so much for all your work and support in the background as well. And see you very, very soon. We've got episode 3 coming up this time next week, which is going to be adaptations for 2021, 2022 and beyond. And that's going to be Tuesday 19th by 30. So we'll see you all really, really soon.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.